One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, episode 146, I want to say. We're closing in on the big 150. We've got to do something very special when that happens. But if you're just tuning in for the first time ever, we are the Just Interesting Podcast, where we talk about things that we find just interesting. And joining me, Alex, today, as always, it's Robin and Martin. How are you both today, Robin?
Oh, hello. I am well. I am excited to be discussing this mystery of Fermi paradox.
For anyone who hasn't tuned into the podcast ever before, they're going to be really blown away when they hear Robin's actual voice.
I know. See, that's acceptable because it's in an Eastern European accent. Whereas if it was Chinese, we'd all be outraged.
Oh yeah.
Let's be honest. No. Let's be honest.
That's the end of the podcast, right?
That's the way it works, right?
In fact, I 100% blame you, Martin, for inspiring me to just do that stupid voice, because we were talking about South Park shortly before we started recording this episode, which has got nothing to do with the topic of the Fermi paradox and potential scary answers to it. However, that's the reason. If reason were needed.
Well, as you mentioned, Robin, today we are going to be discussing the Fermi paradox, which, for those of you who don't know, it's kind of like, why haven't we contacted aliens or been in touch with them? And some of the scary answers to this paradox, as it were. But we'll be getting into that in a little bit. Before that, we'll be discussing some of our favorite comments from the past week. And also, I'm going to be tantalizing you with a riddle. Would you like a riddle?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that we do? Is there anything else we do on the podcast? That's it now, isn't it? That's.
And yeah, we save things that we've done this week for our live quizzes, which go out once a month.
That's what we do, yes. So, would you care for a riddle?
Tell me.
Indubitably.
Might be quite a simple one this week. We'll see. Without wings, I fly. Without eyes, I cry. What am I?
Ooh.
Without wings, I fly.
Without wings, I fly. Without eyes, I cry. What am I? I'll let you mull on that one for a while, and I'll reveal the answer at the end of the episode.
Okay.
But before we move on, I just want to say an extra special thank you to anyone who's supporting us over on Patreon. Over on Patreon, if you are interested in supporting us, we do a weekly series called A Little More Interesting, which is like a little bonus episode of the podcast that you get access to. You also get access to our Discord, and you get sneak previews of upcoming documentary content episodes that we make over on our second channel, Uncovered. Click through and see what we've uploaded there. We're really proud of the videos that we've got up there at the moment. And there'll be more coming up in the near future.
And what have we covered recently? We've done Taylor Swift and the Super Bowl conspiracy.
We did.
Elon Musk and brain implants. There's been a series where we look at Am I the Asshole? If you know that series on Reddit, where people say, Am I the Asshole if X, Y, and Z? And we break it down ourselves and ask the question, are they truly the asshole? So a variety of different little bits and pieces that we do over there. So do join us if you're interested.
Indeed, I would like to say a very special thank you to Amy Licious, Cindy Hafner, James, Rashad Najjar, Caleb Wilkerson, Kurt Jones, John Baker, Janie, Henny Ruffle, The Super Show Podcast, Nicholas Dill, Emmett Tapia, Ahmad, Peaswad, Josh Chomatek, A Filthy Casual, and Simon Workman for their extra special gold and silver tier membership support for yonks now. It's been amazing. You are the goats.
Wow. I've never heard you use that expression. Goodness. That was great.
Did I nail it? Did it sound organic?
you absolutely nailed it. That was wonderful. Wow.
Wow. It's like
we are down like with the kids.
I've de-aged myself by a decade just by saying that one thing. It's incredible.
Learning the lingo. I like it.
Well, yes, thank you. Each and every one of you, you are amazing people. Now, fellas, did you have any favourite comments from the past week?
Yes, actually. I've got a comment from, I'm going to say, Toby Kadachi. There's numbers in the name. I'm never quite sure how you're supposed to pronounce those things. But they commented on the post we shared to our latest video on our second channel, Uncovered. This is a re-upload, a remaster, in fact, of a video we made about Lisa Nowak, the first, and I think so far only, NASA astronaut to be fired by NASA. And her story is so remarkable, it's incredible. But anyway, check that video out. It's really interesting. And Toby Kadashi commented, because it was Valentine's Day, upon which we shared this video, said, "Happy Wednesday, the 14th of February means nothing to me." And that just made me laugh. It's a great comment, I thought. It just really got me. So,
yeah. Oh, that's good. That's good.
I've got a comment from Case Closed. And this was in relation to the Brutal Dictators Who Are Still in Power episode we did last week. And they write, "Excellent episode. I never knew Al-Assad had a British wife. Something I wish you had mentioned was the fact that his family are all Alawites. Alawites are a branch of Islam that actually differs from other forms, and they celebrate Christmas, drink wine, they can drink alcohol, and believe in reincarnation, and keep their beliefs secret from outsiders." So, I mean, that all sounds very mysterious, and a little bit like they may be picking and choosing some of the nice bits, right? Celebrate Christmas.
That's a little bit, yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
And drinking alcohol. But, you know, fair play. So I'd like to learn more about the Alawites, actually. So maybe we could cover them in a future episode.
It's definitely, I saw that comment. And admittedly, I felt bad because, I didn't mention that when I was discussing Al-Assad. But it's interesting. And I wonder, like, if there's any relevance to it in like, his... did it lead to him becoming a brutal dictator because of that faith? Is there something about that? Or
it's well known that celebrating Christmas does set people up to become dictators.
Is it just an interesting tidbit, or is there good any question. Kind of connection there? But I don't know. And even speculating on it feels kind of wrong. I feel like I need more information.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
What about you, Alex? Anything stood out?
Well, I was actually going to choose Case Closed comment as well. But another comment that I did want to mention was on the same episode, Thrill House with a 5 instead of an S.
Good one. Yeah.
Says a phenomenal Partridge reference by Martin. And I looked at it and they put a time code in, and it was when you're describing things is a bit too obvious, a bit too petrol-y.
I said that is the nichest reference I've ever used.
I know.
I don't think even Robin or Alex are going to get that one.
No, completely passed me.
Admittedly, I had to look back and I didn't catch that one originally. So no, that was a bit too niche for me.
Well, I'm glad someone picked up on it. Very good.
But I think the reason I wanted to mention this one is because, I mean, We're fans of Partridge on the podcast, and we often slip in references, but I that's one of the rare instances where we've actually got a comment where someone picked up on it. well done, Thrill House, for that. Right, well, fellas, are you ready to discuss the Fermi Paradox?
Oh, yeah.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling Yuzu Mango IQ Mix Hydration Mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.
So for anyone out there who hasn't heard of the Fermi Paradox before, let me just briefly summarize. So the Fermi Paradox is this apparent contradiction between the high probability of the existence of extraterrestrial civilizations in the universe and the lack of evidence or contact with such civilizations. So it's named after a physicist called Enrico Fermi. If you've seen Oppenheimer, I believe he was one of the scientists in that as well. And the paradox arises from the vast number of potentially habitable planets in the observable universe. If you're familiar with Drake's equation, I think that's another equation that basically highlights that there are many thousands of habitable planets across the, you know, across the galaxy, and does an actual formula for working this out. But yeah, so this leads to the question, if extraterrestrial civilizations are likely to exist, why haven't we observed any signs of their presence, whether it be radio signals or any other form of communication? Even just spotting them in the sky, like looking out for Dyson spheres or whatever, which scientists are on the lookout for now, but we've yet to discover any. That and the Fermi paradox.
us commoners. Yeah. Yeah. They're trying to hide it from us, Alex.
Oh, of they course. Know. Yeah. I mean, it's a big cover up. But the Fermi paradox
is stalled pretty early on. What's Martin's view on this whole situation?
There is no paradox.
I mean, that's an interesting one. Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely bring it up. But I mean, the Fermi paradox, and there are potential answers to it, which we're going to discuss today. Potential speculative explanations for these hypotheses to reconcile this apparent contradiction. And I think, if you're familiar with any of these explanations, some of them can get a little bit existential and a little bit kind of horrifying when you think too deeply about it. And I think we're going to focus on some of those explanations today.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. Yes.
So who would like to go first, or would you like me to start with one of the most disturbing theories I came across?
Oh, yeah. You kick off, Alex. That sounds good.
Okay. Well, the one that freaks me out the most is the dark forest theory. Ooh. And this was a term that was coined for the idea in 2008 by a science fiction author called Liu Shixin in his novel The Dark Forest. In his novel, the dark forest hypothesis is introduced by the character Ye Wenjie while visiting her daughter's grave. She introduces three key axioms to a new field that she describes as cosmic sociology. And so this is really kind of like logical steps that we have to imagine if we were thinking about other civilizations. Suppose a vast number of civilizations distributed throughout the universe on the order of the number of observable stars these civilizations make up the body of a cosmic society. Number two, suppose that the primary need of survival, the primary need of any civilization is survival. So civilizations are going to try and survive at all cost. That is their, you know, primary motive. Number three, suppose that civilizations continually expand over time, but the total matter in the universe remains constant. The only logical conclusion to these three things, with the acceptance of these, is that any intelligent life in the universe will be pitted against all other life in the struggle for survival. And there's a summary as well of this that explains it a little better that I want to read from a novel called The Killing Star by Charles Pellegrino and George Zebrowski. So here, this is an excerpt of it. If you don't mind indulging me.
Please go ahead.
So in it, they write, "The great silence, i.e. absence of SETI signals from alien civilizations, is perhaps the strongest indicator of all that high relativistic velocities are attainable and that everybody out there knows it. The sobering truth is that relativistic civilizations are a potential nightmare to anyone living within range of them. The problem is that objects traveling at an appreciable fraction of light speed are never where you see them when you see them. Relativistic rockets, if their owners turn out to be less than benevolent, are both totally unstoppable and totally destructive. A starship weighing in at around 1,500 tons, approximately the weight of a space shuttle when it's fully fueled, impacting an Earth-like planet at only 30% of light speed, will release 1.5 million megatons of energy, an explosive force equivalent to 150 times today's global nuclear arsenal." So, the game plan is, in its simplest terms, the relativistic inverse to the golden rule. Do unto the other fellow as he would do unto you, and do it first. So, the rules don't apply to other species, basically, of how we should treat each other. Both humans and wolves lack inhibitions against killing chickens. If we find another civilization, then the safest thing to do would be to shoot at them before they shoot at us and kill us first, is the situation. And there's an example, basically. So here's a thought experiment. Imagine yourself taking a stroll through Manhattan, somewhere north of 68th Street, deep inside Central Park, late at night. It would be nice to meet someone friendly, but you know that the park is dangerous at night. That's when the monsters come out. There's always a strong undercurrent of drug dealings, muggings, and occasional homicides. It's not easy to distinguish the good guys from the bad guys. They dress alike and their weapons are concealed. The only difference is intent, and you can't read minds. Stay in the dark long enough and you may hear an occasional distant shriek or blunder across a body. How do you survive the night? The last thing you want to do is shout, "I'm here." The next to last thing you want to do is reply to someone who shouts, "I'm a friend." What you would like to do is find a policeman or get out of the park, but you don't want to make a noise or move towards a light where you might be spotted, and it's difficult to find either a policeman or your way out without making yourself known. The safest option then is to hunker down and wait for daylight, then safely walk out. There are, of course, a few obvious differences between Central Park and the rest of the universe. There is no policeman, there is no way out, and the night never ends.
Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, one of the scariest sentences.
Existential dread. Well, I mean, was that written in like the 70s? Because I swear, New York, mate, what are you doing in the bushes? I'm just waiting until the morning, waiting until light.
It was written in 1995. Yeah.
Is it that dangerous now at night? Anyway, that's off topic. Wow.
It's probably, yeah, more, you can imagine it, even if you don't live in New York. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know how dangerous it is these days.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
But that's the idea, basically. There could be other civilizations out there, but they're all hunkering down in the, you know, proverbial Central Park of the universe. Yeah. and not trying to draw attention to each other. Mm. And there's the logical notion of if all civilizations are just trying to survive, then they know that if they find another civilization, they will make the same logical conclusion. And any kind of contact with another civilization, chances are going to lead to, you know, one of them shooting first and destroying the other one. It's kind of like the film The Dark Knight, if anyone's seen that. It's kind of like the prisoners on the boats, or the two boats, each with the power to blow the other one up. But they don't know, you know, they kind of have to do it first. But neither of them want to, really. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, what I will say, Alex, is that the theory that I've got is very, very similar. It comes under a different kind of guise, but it's very similar so, you know, it makes sense for us to maybe combine these two.
Yeah, go for it.
Two together. So it's called the predatory alien theory. The idea being that there could be advanced civilizations out there, but that could basically competing for resources to be exploitive. And so they're going to be expansionist and aggressive, like you say. That's the reason why there's such silence, is because these predatory civilizations, these predatory aliens, are already wiping each other out. And so we just haven't come across one that's going to be an aggressor to our civilization yet. And that's why that's why in the observable universe we don't see lots of alien life forms, because when they get close to another, they are destroyed for the sake of competing for resources, like we do on Earth, right? Is it a trait not only of humans but also of all species throughout the whole of the universe, is that competition for resources, survival of the fittest, if you were, and expansionism. And so, you know, that's the reason why we haven't seen any, because, you know, when we or other civilizations find another, our first motive is to either wipe them out or be wiped out ourselves. So that's why there's this kind of hidden existence of certain civilizations remaining hidden from detection in order to protect ourselves. So
that's the reason why the universe is so quiet, is because it's basically suicide not to, unless you're a very talented murderer wandering around Central Park.
or you know that you have the upper hand on others. But I think there are definitely some issues with this. I think the first one is the fact that it's attributing our own behaviors as humans onto other civilizations. It's suggesting that we will be aggressive, that we will compete for resources and expand. We want to expand the whole time, whereas that's purely an assumption. Other civilizations might act completely differently and also have a better, more advanced understanding that actually cooperation is the way in which we can achieve greater goals than just that of our civilization. There's also, of course, like a lack of evidence. We don't know that extraterrestrials are going to be aggressive.
There's going to be a lack of evidence with all of these theories. Exactly. That's kind of the problem.
exactly. And then, of course, we've got a bit of bias as well, sample bias. So we are only basing this on Earth and the people that live on Earth. And so we don't have any kind of knowledge of any kind of predatory aliens and other forms of intelligent life. So it's definitely not a known, but it just kind of dovetails from what you were saying as well. It's a similar kind of theory, right?
It's building on it, essentially. It's more of, I guess, it's a negative statement about us than anything else, because we've come to the logical, this is basically the axioms. Those three statements are logical conclusions that we as humans would come to, that survival is the ultimate goal, and any kind of interaction is kind of, even if there's a 10% chance that they're going to be hostile, we should shoot them first.
Yeah, like if extraterrestrials were listening in.
They might not have that thought at all, but we just don't know that and we can't take the risk, so we have to kill them before they kill us.
I mean, does one lead on to the other? If they were to understand that this was the way that we were thinking, would it change their thinking to be more aggressive? Mm.
Well, yeah, and but like the statements like say that if we're thinking it, then we know that they're thinking this as well, so we need to shoot first before yes. they shoot us,
yeah.
because they're thinking the exact same thing that we're thinking. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, as you say, that is a kind of flaw because we don't know that. We don't know that that's what they're thinking. Yeah.
I think this exercise that you just described, kind of, for me, it's the one thing that to a layperson who's not very well trained in science beyond secondary school exposes the limitations of science as a discipline, because it makes perfect sense to base all of our approaches to trying to discover alien life in general, let alone intelligent alien life, upon what evidence we already have. So in the search for habitable planets in the galaxy, we're looking for planets that are about the same size as Earth, in the same temperature zone in their solar system relative to the sun, the Goldilocks zone, they call it, that has water on the planet. And in this case, of course, the search for extraterrestrial intelligence is all about looking for radio signals, because as far as we know as humans, radio waves are the only way of form of communication that can travel across the vacuum of space. And I find this very fascinating, but also kind of depressingly hilarious that humans, you know, got these scientists who are the leaders in their field, the best people in the world to do this job. They're sending out radio signals and getting nothing back. And this parliament thinks the aliens have moved on from radio. You know, if they're on to the next thing, the subspace frequencies of Star Trek. They're just, no one's looking for radio anymore.
Just like showing a Roman or like someone from 1,000 years ago electricity. We have no idea what this form is that they're communicating.
Or the Roman through. Might be using something akin to semaphore, you know, waving flags in the air, and we're looking at them like, what the hell are they doing? Like, nobody knows semaphore anymore. We all use radio. But it's also what's so terrifying about it, I think, particularly SETI. There's always part of me that, obviously, I'm an optimist. I prefer to be a peacemaker and a peace seeker. So I'm glad that there are scientists out there just sending out friendly messages saying, hi, anyone out there? But there's part of me that's also terrified when you say what you just said, Martin. Or was it the predatory alien theory or whatever?
Yeah.
Which is, there's aliens out there who are just poodling along and suddenly they get this signal from Earth saying, hi, we're here, come and find us. And they're like, boys, load your guns.
Yep.
Rev your engines. We've got a new target.
Yeah, we'll be the next void in the universe of life. Right.
Oh, that could be
the scariest message, first message that we ever get from like an alien civilization. They just send us a message that just reads, shush, they'll hear you. Be quiet, they're going to hear you. Oh my God.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to iqbar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's iqbar.com, promo code KELLER20.
That is actually, yeah. How do you respond to that? We know how we would respond. Scientists would be like, oh, wow, who are you and what's wrong? Like, can't tell you over the phone.
Shut up, shut up. You're drawing too much attention to our part of the galaxy.
If you don't shut up, they'll find us and... Ah!
It's just their equivalent of like awkwardly hanging up. They're like, oh, I'm going through a tunnel. Bye. They just wanted to get us off the phone.
Going through a wormhole, sorry. There's well, my theory that I want to talk to you, my hypothesis, is not as scary, I think, as yours, but in a way it's more existential, I think. And it's called the Great Filter Hypothesis. And to understand this, perhaps it would be useful to discuss the Kardashev scale briefly, which you've probably heard of. I know that Alex and Martin have, but I'll, for the benefit of our listeners who may be unfamiliar with it, this is a scale created by an astrophysicist called Nikolai Kardashev, which is a way of thinking about how civilizations might progress. And he came up with a scale of three, type one, type two, and type three civilizations. A type one civilization has figured out how to harness all the energy available on their planet. Humans aren't there yet, but we're getting there. You know, we've got nuclear energy, we know about hydropower, wind power, solar energy. We're getting very close to being able to harness all the energy that is available on our home planet. That's the type one civilization. A type two civilization have figured out how to harness all the energy of their own star. And this is going, Alex mentioned this earlier, a Dyson sphere is a theoretical way in which this could be achieved. You know, building a machine around your star to harness that energy and send it back to the planet. And, you know, once you've reached that level, you've reached interplanetary travel. So it's not far, you're not far from traveling between solar systems and perhaps even between galaxies. Which takes us on to type three civilizations, which is civilizations that have harnessed all the energy available in their galaxy. Now, according to the Kardashev scale, this is the highest, this is the peak of civilization can reach. The implication being, when you take it into account with along with the Fermi paradox, that these civilizations don't exist yet, because if they did, we presumably would have witnessed them, you know, found a Dyson sphere, like Alex mentioned, or we would have heard some kind of radio signal being transmitted by somebody who would have done what we did and developed radio technology before they moved on to the next thing that can communicate across space.
They'd be too big to ignore, kind of.
Exactly, too big to ignore. Yeah. So the question is then, in terms of answering the Fermi paradox, in light of the Kardashev scale, why haven't these civilizations developed yet? Could it be that any student of history, like I am, knows that there's a pattern in human civilization that great societies develop, great cities, great monumental achievements. Look at the pyramids, look at the Indus Valley, look at the Roman Empire. All these great civilizations develop and then suddenly they just stop. And sometimes it's a gradual process, sometimes it's almost instantaneous, kind of like Atlantis, but for real. So the Great Filter Hypothesis suggests that maybe civilizations reach a certain point and then in a kind of cosmic self-correction, before they can go any further and use up all the energy in the galaxy, they destroy themselves, whether by accident or on purpose. I mean, just cast your minds back to the 20th century and the paranoia around the Cold War. We're still living in the nuclear age where the threat of nuclear war is very real, but a few decades ago, it seemed like it could happen tomorrow and humanity would wipe itself out with the push of a button.
Well, just this week, I mean, Putin either wants to or has put a nuclear weapon in space. I can't remember. I don't know what the story was, but
yeah,
we're still very much in that arena, haven't we?
Yeah,
exactly. Or perhaps it could be something more catastrophic, like we accidentally create a black hole by creating some kind of scientific device to measure particles on a subatomic level. Who knows?
The Large Hadron Collider.
Yeah, exactly. And now they want to build a bigger one. So great. Thanks, guys. So this is the Great Filter. But this breaks down into a couple of other levels, if you don't mind me talking about it for a bit longer, because there are several ways that the Great Filter theory might explain how civilizations, or how the human civilization will progress in relation to it. So there's the really pessimistic one, which is kind of the Great Filter is going to happen to humans. It just hasn't happened yet. Could be an asteroid. Yeah. It's going to hit us, knock us out. Could be we're going to kill ourselves with nukes. Could be global warming, climate change. We brought it on ourselves by our misuse of fossil fuels and our rampant consumerism and materialism, draining our planet rather than sustaining it.
So it's suggesting that the filter might be our own cause.
Absolutely.
Or could be something that's just happens due to the luck of the draw, unlucky asteroid hitting the Earth.
Yeah, so it could be that the Great Filter is ahead of us. It could be that it's ahead of us, but actually we're developing fast enough that we might escape it. For example, we're sending people to the moon again to build a moon base. If an asteroid hit Earth, the people on the moon would probably survive. If we go to Mars, like Elon Musk wants to take us with SpaceX, we could survive even longer. If we can get beyond Mars, humanity would survive. Sure, Earth might not survive, but humanity could outlive climate change and an asteroid and a nuclear war because the people out there would continue.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to COSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at COSI.org.
So that's a possibility. The other, a most optimistic interpretation of the Great Filter theory is that we've passed it. You know, the Cold War is over. The mutually assured destruction worked. People aren't going to nuke themselves to death. We recognize climate change is going to screw us over, and we're switching to renewables, not fast enough to stop bad damage to the Earth's climate, but enough to help us survive and get off planet. There are people who optimistically say, yeah, we've passed the Great Filter. We've made it. We've passed the test. Not all of humanity will survive, but enough of us will make it so that we can become the first civilization to perhaps reach Type 2 and go out into the galaxy and meet others.
It could even have happened like millions of years ago, right? The Great Filter could have been going from single-celled life forms to multi-celled life forms. It could be such a incredibly monumentally rare event, like require the perfect situation that it's just like very rarely happens. So like that could have happened, the Great Filter, we could have passed it millions of years ago maybe.
That's true actually, yeah. We could have Neanderthals. Well, we know that they didn't get completely wiped out. They crossbred with
It came very close at several points, didn't it? There was less than 10,000 at some point in our history.
there were points where it looks like we could have died, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years ago. That's a good point, Alex. Maybe it was so far long ago. Maybe we've made it further than any other civilization in the galaxy, in the universe. In which case, we could be dealing with the rare Earth hypothesis, which is that, sad to say, maybe the answer to the Fermi paradox is that we are the super advanced aliens who are going to go out across the galaxy making contact with other developing intelligent life. Maybe we are meant to lead the way, if you want to put a fatalistic kind of predestination spin on it. Maybe we are supposed to learn all the lessons of our own mistakes and go out there and say, peace be with you. We are here to teach you our ways of love and understanding and living in harmony with yourselves. Because that seems to be how most aliens speak to humans.
Of course, yeah.
To me, it feels like they will forever, like it's not like a hurdle you jump over and then you're free, right? The race is finished. There's going to be more down the track. You know, just looking even today at what seems like it's going to be a huge boom, another huge boom in misinformation across the internet. You see, you know, with the new AI video generation tools that have been announced today.
It's crazy.
And so you think about all of the potential for that to cause huge amounts of destruction. Like imagine if someone made one of those that that led to war because it was misinformation. You write a prompt for it to show, I don't know, the assassination of someone or the massacre of people. Like, you know, if you asked AI to show what happened in Israel and Palestine, right? Recently, the massacre that caused all of what's going on now, the initial spark. That's quite conceivable that you could get these flashpoints from something like that. I mean, millions of examples of potential hurdles that would cause these spikes in tension across our planet. But basically, what I'm trying to say is, I think that there'll continue to be these moments where we have to get beyond again and again the great filter.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many, but I guess in that instance the great filter would just be technology. We didn't overcome technology. Technology was our downfall. Too much, too fast. Another one that frightens me is people just engineering like diseases like COVID and stuff. I'm not saying COVID was engineered in a lab or anything, but like YouTube. No, sorry, I'm not saying that. But the kind of like the ability to do that is becoming very kind of easy. And like in the next few years with like CRISPR and stuff, like people can just order dangerous like equipment to their house and potentially make another like super bug in the next like few decades, just anyone using off the shelf ingredients, which is another thing that's potentially scary. So there's like you said, Martin, there's any number of ways that we can kill ourselves.
Well, that's it, isn't it? Technology is such a wide expansing topic, but it seems like, you know, these moments of potential catastrophe are just getting closer and closer together in our history, aren't they?
Or you can just go classic Terminator route. Classic Terminator. We build an AI that robots and they come and kill us. Stick to the classics.
Yeah.
You know
what
depresses me about Terminator is, as Elon Musk proved, was it last year when he announced that robot that he was going to make fit with Tesla? Was it Tesla?
Yeah.
I can't remember who it was
with. Tesla robot.
Much like Star Trek, Terminator is one of those things where it inadvertently inspired a lot of people to be like, I'm going to go into software. I'm going to make AI. And they're doing it. They're building AI and they're excitedly saying, we've almost reached the point of general artificial intelligence. The singularity is decades away, folks. We're going to do it. And then all these philosophers and ordinary folk are saying, whoa, 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 slow down.
It's not a good thing.
And you know that there's going to be someone out there who's going to be like, you know what would be really cool? I'm going to build a Terminator because that was such a cool thing. And now we're going to have AI in the way. I'm going to build a T-800, I'm going to build a gun, as well, that the T-800 can use. I'm going to make it, you know, be able to identify targets in the crowd. It's going to have the top, most advanced facial scanning software ever, and it's going to have thermal vision, all this cool stuff, just like in the movies. And no one will be there to say, dude, slow down. Maybe we should not build the thing that the movie said would kill us. Come on.
And the thing is, like, I don't know how you feel about human nature, but I just feel if the technology is there, even if everyone is saying, oh, we shouldn't build that, let's not build that.
You build it because you can.
You just know that someone will because they can. Yeah, exactly.
They didn't listen to Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park. They didn't.
No, we did not.
Well, I have a question for you both. Bearing in mind the very scary, frankly, this has been one of the scariest episodes I think we've had for a long time. Potential answers to the Fermi paradox. Do you think intelligent alien life exists, extraterrestrial life? And do you think we'll meet it, whether near or far or at all?
Yes.
Okay.
I think overwhelmingly likely. I think that we don't have the technology, you know, to be able to. To be able to say for sure, right? Yet. But, you know, we're still using the radio waves.
Fingers crossed.
We shall see. But, yeah, no, I think just the probability, and the Fermi paradox, it almost for me seems a little bit arrogant as well. It's like, we know it exists, and but why haven't we found it yet? We should be able to because these conditions exist. And, yeah. I think it feels a little bit like within time we will just discover alien life. How advanced it will be is another matter, but I think it's just a matter of time. And will it happen within our lifetimes? I'm actually quite optimistic. I don't know if that's the right word because
we'll find just any alien life, not necessarily intelligent alien life.
Yeah. All right. Alien
life that's, you know, the, yeah, not intelligent alien life.
Like the extremophiles.
Just like some microbes or something, maybe.
Yeah. Maybe slightly more than just microbes. But I don't know about intelligent.
Like a little alien cat or something.
yeah, that kind of thing. But yeah, something that's definitely like, wow, that could, you know, that could develop into something more. Ooh. We shall see. I'm optimistic, okay. If that's the right term.
Yeah, that's optimism. Yeah,
that definitely is.
How about you?
I do think that intelligent aliens must exist somewhere in the universe. I don't think that we're the first ones. I do think that maybe it's rarer than we suspect. But also there's another theory that I just kind of want to mention that is kind of so bleak that I don't want to believe it, but I kind of worry that it is true. Oh. And it's just like, it's not a fun one. It's not one to like, that's particularly fun. It's just that we are, without realizing it, just approaching the limits of technology. We've undergone the last like 100-150 years of extreme, unprecedented, like with the Industrial Revolution, technological growth. That's insane. And we keep assuming that that's going to increase. We keep assuming that there's going to be like, oh, we'll cross that hurdle. We'll figure out a solution to that. But what if we are actually just approaching the limits of what's possible?
And so we won't find it because no one could find it because technology doesn't go any further than X.
So there's like
point.
We're never going to be, yeah, we're never going to be in touch with them because there is no faster than light travel and communication. It's just not possible. The industrial fusion might just be not possible. Cryonics turns out to be impossible. We make a general AI and it tells us you can't do that. No. How bleak is that? Like, what if we just, and then we're just left here? We're just left here on the planet with dwindling resources. Maybe that's it, right?
Bleak. Yeah.
That is bleak. Sorry. Let's not think about that.
Yeah. No, I'm sure that's not true. That's a pretty depressing answer. Or some other ones that we haven't brought up are the alien zoo theory. That's quite a fun one.
Oh, yeah.
The whole the prime directive. Aliens know that we're here. They've logged us and they're looking at us like we're in an alien zoo. And but they've got the prime directive, like in Star Trek. They're not making contact with us until we, you know, overcome our own potential problems. We mature as a species.
So it's kind of like a positive spin on Martin's and your earlier suggestion, where the aliens are out there, they know we're here, but they're kind of keeping quiet in a scientific sense of let's not interfere, let's watch these weirdos figure things out.
Yeah, exactly.
They're too intelligent to engage in something so trivial and stupid like attacking us. Why would we need their stupid carbon?
Yeah.
They're silly resources.
Silly,
we don't need that.
Platforms.
What's that bullshit? Why do you need that?
They're made of meat. How weird is that?
They speak through their mouths. They don't have telepathy? Oh my gosh. How unsophisticated.
Another theory could be that it's kind of similar to what you said, Robin, about the radio waves. Like, that's so primitive. Why do we assume that they would be using radio waves? But what about that they are just right in front of us and the evidence is there, but like, we just view it as natural phenomena.
Right.
We assume that they're riding around in spaceships or building Dyson spheres, but all of that's far too primitive. And extraterrestrial engineering is actually like the spiral arrangement of galaxies that should fly apart. No, aliens have just done that, you know, or black holes that by our own understanding of physics shouldn't be that big or shouldn't be like, there are like certain anomalies in the universe that we don't understand. And it's so actually cool. Just these massive, massive alien beings, possibly that are just, you know, like an ant would look at a skyscraper.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah.
They're not going to think like, oh, humans built that.
Yeah.
They're going to think, well, that's odd. They're not going to think anything because they're an ant, but you know what I mean, like
no, that's a good thing. I like that analogy. That's good.
Yeah, that's good.
I like the idea. Just to go back to the question of, I agree with you, Martin, by the way. I think life definitely is out there. I think we're going to discover extraterrestrial life in the near future of humanity. Probably not in our lifetime, but in the near future of humanity, we'll discover microbes or maybe an insect of some kind on another planet, maybe in our solar system. But I wouldn't be surprised, because I think my life experience teaches me that if the universe can laugh at you, it will. So I wouldn't be surprised if, before we find any actual living organisms, whether primitive or advanced, we'll never make contact with intelligent alien life. But what we will find is a perfect cube or something floating through space. And we'll just be like, what the fuck? What the huh? And we'll just never know. And scientists will be arguing and saying, well, it has to have been made by somebody with a machine. And others will be saying, no, it's just some weird anomaly where a star collapsed in this particular way, and here's the math to prove it. And we'll just never know. And that'll be it, the cosmic joke on the human race. And maybe that'll be proof of the alien zoo. Some alien teenager opened the gate and like pushed this cube through, let it float through the solar system. It's like, see how they react to that? And then their dad, the zookeeper, is like, told you not to do that.
Just imagining us finding it and 2001 music intensifies. Yes.
And one day someone pushes it and a disc tray opens and it's like, oh my gosh, it's a it's a games console.
It was an Xbox Series X all along.
I was going to say, yeah. There's always the, oh, we're living in a simulation theory. We're not finding extraterrestrial life because it hasn't been programmed into the simulation.
Oh,
yeah. Ooh. I mean, that's actually another potential reason for another potential answer, is that alien civilizations just get enough technology to be able to simulate whatever they want, like perfectly. So there's no need to explore the universe or look outwards because they can just simulate whatever they want.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean that's the simulation theory, I guess, is if that is going to happen at some point in the future, then maybe we're already in that simulation.
Yes, so it's overarching. It's an overarching theory that really fills you with some dread there.
Mm. I love those kind of thought exercises.
Oh, nice. Well, fellas, interesting discussion. Interesting discussion all around, and existential, but not too bleak. Hopefully.
I'd like to say we ended on a positive note, but I don't know if we did. But you know,
I'd say more scary rather than bleak. I think,
yeah,
terrifying, but not bleak necessarily.
Let us know what you think of the Fermi paradox and some of these solutions in the comments below. And are there any that we missed that you would like us to talk about or that you'd like to mention? Please do let us know in the comments below. I'm really interested in topics like this. So it's an interesting one. It's interesting. Well, I find it interesting anyway. But yeah, thank you both of you for indulging me this evening and having a wonderful discussion. Is there anything else that we need to say before we sign off?
I'd like to the riddle, yeah.
Of course. Why do I always, I always forget the riddle? Did you have any guesses? I'll read it again.
Yeah, please.
Without wings, I fly. Without eyes, I cry. What am I?
I mean, without wings I fly makes me think of time, because time flies, but time doesn't cry.
Oh, that's good. Couldn't cry. No.
Yeah, that's good, yeah.
What cries? It's not going to be something actually physically crying, is it? What cries?
What cries?
I can just think of Cry Me a River. That's...
You've got it. That's the song.
Justin Timberlake. Yeah. That's it.
Justin Timberlake.
Hopefully no copyright issues there, you know. But just
it was spot on.
It was.
It sounds so much like it, I think. Automated. I might pick it up,
Exactly. I cry. Fly. Flying and crying.
Mm.
I think I'm going to have to give it to you unless...
You should tell us, yeah.
Yeah, go for it.
It's a cloud.
Okay. Yeah,
wings are flying. Not wings, I cry.
That's good. Okay. That's good.
I mean,
like it's solid, solid.
Yeah,
well, 6 out of 10.
I did like your connection with. I mean, I liked where you were going with the time idea, though, Robin. That was a
thank you.
Flies, mm. Yeah.
Yeah, but time doesn't cry, does it? So
not quite.
Doesn't really cry. No. But there's something there.
Thank you.
But thank you everyone so much for watching all this way, and we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you'd like to, please do give us a review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to, or if you're watching on YouTube, make sure to smash that like button. And
that's what the kids say, don't they?
That's what the kids say. Yeah. Yep. You are the goats, everyone. So I'm sorry, Robin. but thank you, everyone, so much. And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.